Welcome to the Bull Gap Journal here in the Radio Alabama studio in Sylacauga, Alabama. Robert Holmes here. Some of you know me as Bob. I'm born and raised proudly here in the state of Alabama, Sylacauga, a veteran and a community citizen at large. On the Bull Gap Journal, we talk about life, leadership, and common sense. Today, we're going outside of the Southeast, outside of the state of Alabama, and we're going to visit with Ryan Scoble. Ryan's in Cincinnati, Ohio. He's a recent graduate of Mercyhurst University and a varsity lacrosse player with Mercyhurst. So, Ryan, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Bob. Appreciate being on here.
Excited you're here, and we're gonna dig into a meaningful and exciting story here. And I think most folks will know why I wanted to invite you on the program, so that we could share a little bit of what you've experienced in life here in the last 2 or 3 years. Ryan grew up in Cincinnati and made his way to Mercyhurst a few years ago to play lacrosse because that, sports-wise, that was his passion. Mercyhurst is a nationally ranked NCAA D2 lacrosse program, winning a national championship in 2011. And this year, we were just talking before we went on the air here, this year Mercyhurst finished second in D2 lacrosse. That's quite an achievement. Mercyhurst has a longstanding, outstanding and longstanding lacrosse program, as I understand it, which is what drew you there to play lacrosse,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Well, several months ago, I came across an article in the Wall Street Journal describing Ryan Scoble and a challenging situation for him in 2021. And along with the Wall Street Journal, Ryan's appeared nationally in news articles and some television interviews. And it's about his return to play lacrosse his senior year at Mercyhurst. And that was this 2023 season, this past winter and spring. Now, Ryan, you had to sit out the 2022 season, but you battled your way back for a spot on the team this year with something new. And that was a new heart.
It was.
What I'm going to ask you to do is take a few minutes and, if you would, tell us what happened starting in 2021 and this courageous fight to get back on the team.
Sure. It actually started really in 2020. In November 2020, I'd get a call from home that my father would sustain a stroke, which was odd. My dad's a very active guy. He's been healthy his whole life, and we didn't really know the reason why. After some further examination, the doctors would conclude that he had dilated cardiomyopathy in its late stage heart failure. He would be gone. This was COVID, so he was in the hospital for two to three months, really recovering. With this, he was given an LVAD, and that was to my knowledge of heart failure. And then I found myself 3 months later, I eventually returned to school, break. And, 3 months later, it's March, of 2021. And I had just come off a broken foot. I broke my foot training to get back into the season. And once I was cleared, I came back and I realized I wasn't physically there, that I was, out of shape. So I would stay after practice, get extra reps, run extra, work out extra, really anxiously working to get myself back to where I wanted to be, to where all my teammates had been. And it had felt the more I worked out, the worse my condition got. I would get tired quicker. Walking up a flight of stairs became challenging. I began waking up in the middle of the night with my heart beating out of my chest, and just strange things started to happen. Again, I'm an arrogant 21-year-old. I don't think I have heart failure. I think it's allergies or, you know, I'm just stressed with school. Maybe it's an upper respiratory infection. I pushed everything serious off the table and just kind of diagnosed myself with a minor sickness. My first game back was in Wheeling, West Virginia. It'd be my last. Got in, I believe, a little late in the second quarter. And I quickly realized on the field, I was like, I can't breathe. I would make a play on the ball for a couple seconds, and then I would immediately shoot down to my knees. And it wasn't like it was like me just being fatigued. It was like my body was physically telling me, you need to stop. Luckily, my trainer knew me really well and knew something was up. And he took me out and he said, we're going to get you some x-rays and really check you out here. He thought it was just a lot of the time in Erie, Pennsylvania, where Mercyhurst is, we play in extreme conditions, mainly snow. And a lot of the time, running a lot in cold weather, we've seen a lot of kids on our team get exercise-induced asthma. So at the time, I'm thinking, you know, he's like, I think you might have some of this asthma. We've seen it go around the team here. Let's get you checked out and see if we can get you an inhaler or what the deal is. I would get x-rays, and the x-rays would conclude that my heart was extremely inflamed and enlarged. They would then send me in to get an echocardiogram, which is a ultrasound of my heart, and it would show that my heart was outputting at a 10% ejection fraction, which quite literally meant it was just twitching. I would then get admitted to the hospital and began being treated as a heart failure patient. I would then be sent home.
I hadn't talked transplant yet.
No,
this is all leading up to that.
For their knowledge, they wanted me to be able to live with heart failure as long as I could, because at this time, my heart isn't outputting what it needs to be, but all other, you know, criticals were stable for the most part. I went home and I was began treatment with the same heart care panel as my father, and then I was home for a couple weeks and I woke up from a nap and I was in cardiogenic shock. I was then rushed to the hospital, and my local hospital concluded that my heart was so damaged that devices wouldn't work, medicine wouldn't work, and that I needed a transplant.
Okay. But up until this time, the prognosis was, hey, just live with a failing heart.
Which would
take a lacrosse totally off the table.
Everything off the table.
But then we went into phase two of this. Okay.
Yeah. I was told I would never be able to strenuously exercise. I was told get into Pilates. You know, you're never going to play a ball game again, whether it's pickup basketball or lacrosse, you know, knock that out.
That was a blow. Stretching. For a guy like you, that had to be a blow. Yeah.
Oh, and that was the worst part. Because sports to me have always just been, you know, like a sense of freedom. It's where I met most of my friends. It's where I made a lot of good memories, and kind of having that just ripped away from you. I felt like a big part of my life was temporarily taken out. And I also felt at that time, a lot of my paths that I had that I wanted to further go into were just closed. You know, I felt living with heart failure was hopeless. And I victimized myself at that time of my life. I was upset at everything.
Sure.
And when Cleveland Clinic came around, it kind of was my light at the end of the tunnel. I remember getting to Cleveland Clinic, and Cleveland Clinic was renowned globally for being one of the best heart hospitals in the world. And when I got there, my condition was so bad that I was almost immediately put onto the transplant list, and I began waiting. And the waiting process is you're eager, you know, it's that second chance of life. And I was excited, but more nervous. And I was nervous about how everything was going to go and how, you know, when it was going to happen and all that. And I waited for about a week, and then I had a blood test reviewed that I had heparin-induced thrombocytopenia, or HIT, which was a blood infection. There was an antibody in the blood that refuted a anticoagulant called heparin, which is required in the transplant process. So I was immediately taken off the list, and they said, we're going to send repeat blood work, and we'll see, we'll see what it's, but platelet counts are so high that, you know, this test is probably going to come back positive, and you're going to have to wait anywhere 3 to 6 months for this antibody to be out of your blood. Yeah. And that was the biggest blow, because again, previously I was told no device work, that my only real positive path forward would be a heart transplant. And here I'm being told I'm no longer going to get a heart transplant. And that they might try some of these devices, but it would most likely just be me being treated in the hospital until, you know, it was out of my blood. And for the following five till that blood work would come back, I fully came to peace with the fact that, you know, I didn't have much time. There was no way I was going to make it 3 months, let alone a month. So I came to peace in those 5 days with honestly dying. I looked back at my life, back at the relationships I had crafted, the memories I made, and I came to peace with the 21 years of my life. I learned more about myself in those 5 days than the past 21 years of my life.
Right. And so we lead up to the transplant and making your way back to do this senior year back on the varsity team. So the transplant occurred or was performed when?
The 11th of 21.
Okay. And what were the steps you had to take to now? You've had this battle physically and emotionally, quite an emotional battle. But now going forward, there's still going to be a physical and emotional battle now to get back to where you wanted to be to play lacrosse again. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So once I got the transplant, you immediately began your treatment as, you know, the life with the transplant, and they're very precautious with life post transplant. And my goal almost immediately after my transplant was, you know, I want to return and graduate at school, but I want to graduate, you know, playing the game I came in there to play. That didn't settle well with them. Again, they had these same doctors I'm asking to clear me to go to school were the same doctors, you know, monitoring me in the ICU. So there was some backlash with my plan at first. But ultimately I had a young doctor, the doctor I'm in contact with now. He said, you know, Ryan, if you can show physically that your heart can handle, you know, college cross, I'll consider clearing you. And for the months leading up to that, I mean, I did everything piece by piece. My care team said the first month, we don't want you lifting anything heavier than 10 pounds and you can just walk. Right. So I just walk every day, you know, 5 miles, 7 miles a day, I just walk. And then at month three, it was, okay, you can start going to cardiac rehab, you know, go to cardiac rehab and start slowly working into that. And at cardiac rehab, I started getting into more strenuous, started jogging. I started riding the bike. I started, you know, doing a little bit more cardio exercises. And then by month five, at the time I was selling printers. I had a part-time sales job and I was using that money with selling printers to fund this performance gym, this expensive, you know, gym where you go in front of a bunch of trainers and you perform. And so at month five, I began working out at this performance gym. That was ruining in sprinting, weight training, getting my feet back. And then after crafting that, by month eight, I had been cleared by the Cleveland Clinic to the following year, return back to look and in the school.
So this was after like 5 or 6 months.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And then by a year and a half post transplant, I had my pads suited up and I was walking on the first practice.
to the amazement not only of yourself, but probably a lot of folks pulling for you. So what was it
a
like?
A lot of people were pulling for me, but you know, what really motivated me to get back was what I said earlier. You know, I was told by so many people that I would never be able to, that I would, you know, never be able to so much as, like I said, pick up a basketball in a rec basketball game at the gym.
Sure.
And here I was, you know, suiting up with an elite level college lacrosse team. And it was a big goal and it was a drastic goal, but you know, the lessons learned along the way, you know, are going to follow me for many years to come.
Well, I mean, just the things that you've mentioned the struggle, the emotional struggle that you went through of facing this, particularly with so much at stake. For you personally, I mean, those are lessons, and we'll dig into those, you know, as we go into our second segment. But return to the team this year, you guys had a great season. Even though before the interview started, we talked about finishing in second place this year, but that's nothing to sneeze at, man. So what a season.
It was a season. The team itself went through a lot of adversity. So it was even better. It was even more rewarding just to see, how much we really pushed through and worked through to get where we got.
Sure. Now, let's go back, and your dad was on this journey with you. I had to have a similar surgery. How's he doing?
He's doing great. Again, he got a device implanted in him, and his device was supposed to hold him off for anywhere between 1 to 3 years before he received his transplant. But luckily, he got his call that he had a heart only 3 months after me. So we both were in the recovery process together, kind of along similar
steps. Is that a singular story between your dad and you, or are there other folks that have had a parent and a child go through this together?
There are similar stories. Me and my dad were both caused to a genetic precursor. So we both had a gene that reacted to something that we don't really know, but directly attacked our hearts. And we're still finding out kind of really what it was, but yeah, we both had a genetic marker that set it off. So it's not common, but there's other cases of it for sure.
I'll tell your dad hello for us after the interview. So we're gonna lead into a short break here. We've been talking to Ryan Scoble in Cincinnati, Ohio, and if you've picked up his story, is after a heart transplant, returned to play varsity lacrosse at Mercyhurst University and graduated this past year. So we've talked about the battle of going through the heart transplant and facing that, and then the battle back to get a spot on the varsity team. In the next segment, join us, and we're going to dig into some of those lessons learned and values that that I think Ryan can share with us that'll be very meaningful. So stay with us on the Bull Gap Journal, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bull Gap Journal here in the Radio Alabama studio in Sylacauga, Alabama. My guest today is Ryan Scoble. If you saw moments of the first segment, Ryan is just graduated from Mercyhurst University in Erie, Pennsylvania. He was varsity lacrosse player there, finishing out his senior season, but that was after a disruption because of a heart transplant. Played that last season with a new heart. We're going to go into, in the first segment, we talked about the physical and emotional struggles, if you will, or challenges that Ryan faced. And now we're going to dig down into a lot of just that personal experience, lessons learned, and things that are now so valuable, I think, to Ryan and his story. So you shared the experience of returning to varsity lacrosse in 2023. And so in this segment, we want to talk about life, especially what you took away from this courageous and hard-fought recovery after your heart replacement surgery. So I'm sure this gives you a very distinct perspective on life and the value of life.
It does.
Might so I'm going to ask you to share that with us a little bit.
So really the first thing that I got out of it was my experience with, really say it as it is, dying. For a while I didn't just scrape rock bottom. I sat down there, and that time that I had, again, sitting there and being able to realize where I was, it's acted as a kind of a key to whenever I'm doing something, I look back and I'm like, well, I wasn't in that position. I'm here now. This is where I've come. And it really gave me a a foreground of to build off of. And going from rock bottom to building myself up to playing college lacrosse, just along the way, I learned a lot about overcoming obstacles. I learned about what comes with obstacles, that often failing is the best component to success. And I was no stranger to it. I mean, I had to reteach myself how to jog, you know, how to shuffle and to do basic activities. But along the line, really, it was just humbling, and it gave me a perspective of the greater appreciation, the smaller things, not to live minute by minute, but second by second. And working along the way and failing and retrying it and reteaching myself just gave me a greater appreciation of life as it is and what comes with life. I've mentioned a few other times, but I think the beauty with having the heart transplant and beauty of having this second chance of life is to not only just have great experience, but to have bad experience as well, because that's life. You know, life isn't all sunshine rainbows, as I learned. A big part of life is ultimately failing and is being forced to almost overcome these failures. And it just allowed me to be more appreciative of everything that comes with it. And sure. And you know, I like to think that what I learned along the way is almost gives me a head start into my young adult life. I mean, this is a perspective that, you know, not many 21-year-olds can say they've passed away for some time. And that just gives me, like I said, just a greater appreciation of everything. Sure. The hustle, the task at hand, and the results.
Yeah. So in my mind, you know, I view this as quite a gift.
It really is.
That you've received. Now you, as I read, do not know who the donor, the heart donor was, or their family. But I'm sure you carry a certain gratitude, an immense gratitude for that. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. You know, it's a organ transplantation donation is a very, you know, it's a sensitive topic. I was so excited to have my second chance. I mean, because of this man's selfless donation, I was able to graduate college. You know, I'm able to now, you know, buy my first house, you know, hopefully get married and be able to live my life, right. Which at one point seemed like it was over. And it's sensitive because I know that with my gifts came the loss of somebody's son. And that for a while I felt guilty about, because I was eager. I was excited. It was my prospects of a fresh start. And right. I knew that what came with that was the loss of a life. But I can't say enough that man's donation doesn't, you know, wake me up in the morning, that his decision to be an organ donor isn't what drives me to wake up every day and live it to its fullest. Sure. I've said before, and I'll continue to say, that I'm going to give this heart as much life as I possibly can. And I'm going to fill it with experiences, good, bad. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to fully utilize it to its full capacity.
It's yours now. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. So, I know that there's a phrase you lean on, carpe diem. So that has now a special meaning for you, I'm sure.
Yep. Yeah.
You want to share that with us?
Yeah. You know, my school always kind of used carpe diem as its slogan.
Yeah.
Seize the day. And we always kind of laughed because it was just something that we had to put a sticker on the back of our helmet that said carpe diem. And it was always kind of something that was just, oh, carpe diem. But then I found myself in a situation where waking up every day, it is carpe diem. It's, you know, whether it's a Tuesday or Saturday, like we got to go out and really utilize the full opportunity of the day. And yeah, carpe, I'm always out seizing the day. I'm always out, you know, whether it's, again, whether I'm not doing anything or I got a full packed day, my day has to be full of something. And again, it's just the beauty of having this gift. It motivates me every day to go out and try to achieve something, whether it's a mental.
You know, after you and I talked several months ago, when I made contact with you, I dug into Carpe Diem because, you know, we do refer to that as seizing the day, and the rest of the poet's words were, and I'm just going to paraphrase them here, seize today because you don't have any guarantee about tomorrow. I mean, that's what he was really saying. And that's what I hear you saying is that now that you've got this gift and you're seizing the day, it's so important because you, I think, have faced the prospect of not having tomorrow. So
exactly.
Amazing. So graduated this past spring, going to enter into the world of either a professional employment or activity. Any plans to pass along what you've learned in sports with other lacrosse activities?
Yeah. Luckily, I've gotten a couple of speaking opportunities to be able to speak in front of coaches and some players and really just address, you know, the beauty behind the game, because the game ultimately, you know, it's a great sport. Alone that, but the men that play the game is really what I've so much appreciated about it. Some great friends, some friends for life throughout it. And I'd like to have the opportunity to be able to, you know, address what lacrosse meant to me and really the medicinal, you know, the Native Americans, when they created lacrosse, they called it the medicine game. And that stood strong with me as well. Lacrosse had a lot of medicinal benefits to me, really moving forward post transplant. It kind of assimilated me back into life with, you know, socially, but also physically. And, you know, I look to continue to speak to players and coaches about, you know, the beauty of it and what to appreciate within lacrosse, but also I've even had some opportunities to be able to, you know, speak to my high school football team that's coming up,
great.
I've had a couple other speaking opportunities to Rise, really, but to be able to put more light on, you know, the perspectives I learned and the appreciation I was able to get throughout the whole process.
Great. So, might you join a men's league or get back out on the field?
Yeah, of course. Right now it's again, I'm just hunkering in and kind just of cruising figuring out right now the next steps of my life, but I hope so. I hope once I get, you know, I'm figured out and I got a job, or I'm, you know, going back to school, whatever it might be, that I can get back with getting a stick in my hand and just, you know, playing lacrosse with the boys, because that's just that's the fun part about it.
Good. Well, as we close this segment out, is there any last word that you want to share with folks, particularly as some who will not have faced the exact same challenge or obstacle that you faced, but certainly there are a lot of people that, you know, are looking at challenges and then how to be resilient. So anything that you would want to share as we close?
Yeah. And I think the past couple of years, we've all seen up with COVID, and COVID kind of shook it all up. This world's gotten pretty unsettling since, and a lot of obstacles and things along. But I think the best advice I can give is to not close as obstructions. I'd rather look at them as opportunities and opportunities to grow and to build off of. And that's really moving. Yeah, that's really the best advice I can give.
Outstanding. I appreciate that. So many times it's to say what you just said is Yeah, things look tough, but somewhere there's opportunity in there. So the thing to do, because, you know, earlier I go back to one of the things you said as you were going through the diagnosis of your heart failure and then sort of the kick in the teeth where at one point you said, you know, you almost felt victimized. And so many people, when they face obstacles, go to that point of victimization, but you rose above that. And I think what you're offering there is, hey, don't be a victim. Appreciate that. So thanks so much.
Of course, Bob. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, Ryan, I'm gonna look for more great things out of you. My grandkids play lacrosse, so I'm somewhat introduced into the sport. Although they're now pointing toward basketball is their passion. Yep. But anyway, I've watched them bang around the sticks and play lacrosse. It's an exciting sport. I just appreciate your sharing your story with us today. And I think, again, we went outside the region and folks here in Alabama, I just felt like this was a compelling story, Ryan's story. And I just wanted to have Ryan to share this with us because I think it's so meaningful and it gives us some value. So Ryan, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And, Thank all you folks for watching and listening to the Bull Gap Journal today. We talk about life, leadership, and common sense. If you like what you've seen or heard, go to radioalabama.net/bullgap and learn more about the Bull Gap Journal.